This is the final in our series for this summer, and I really want to thank all of you for making this such a meaningful and productive summer with all of your participation. And we've all grown together, and I thank you very, very much for that. In September, we have an entire month of programming. If you look out for your emails, you will find we have a lot of very exciting things going on. We have a series with Esther Wien. We have Shira Smiles is coming at some point. Rabbi J.J. Schechter just confirmed with us yesterday he'll be here. Rabbi Friend is going to be coming. We have a lot of different opportunities going on, and you can really take advantage of all of them. For anyone who is not on our emails, really, you can give me your email address afterward. I'm happy to include you in those emails. And I hope that you will find our programming in September leading up to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur to be very meaningful. But again, this is our final in the series for the summer. I know many people usually travel after Tisha B'Av in the last 2 weeks in August. Sometimes a lot of kids are home. So enjoy your kids who are away for the summer. Enjoy the fact that they're home again, or your grandchildren who are coming home. And enjoy wherever you are traveling to. As we know, this past week, we commemorated Tisha B'Av. And the Navi Yirmiyah writes, Tzion hi doresh ein la. The Navi Yirmiyah bemoans the fact that Eretz Yisrael is a place where doresh ein la. People are not talking enough. People are not thinking enough about Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Lamed, from here we learn, Michlal debai drisha. That teaches us that we have an obligation to talk and to consider and to think about Eretz Yisrael and its significance to all of us. I saw an insight of the Ostrovsky Rebbe a number of years ago, and he was one of the great Talmidei Chachamim who lived in Europe before the Holocaust. He was a contemporary of the great Reb Chaim Ozer. And he made a comment which I think is a penetrating insight. He says, it cannot be coincidental. If you look at the very first conversation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with every single one of the great Jewish leaders in Chumash, you will notice that there is a common thread, there's a common theme in all of those initial conversations. And says the Ostrovsky Rebbe, it cannot be coincidental. So he begins with Avraham Avinu. What is the first conversation that the Torah records between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between God Himself and Avraham Avinu? Obviously, in Parshas Lech Lecha, the very first time that they engage in conversation is Lech Lecha me'artzecha mimoladetecha el ha'aretz asher ereka. God tells Avraham Avinu that He wants him to travel, He wants him to leave everything else behind and bring himself to Eretz Yisrael. But if that is not enough, you then turn to the story of Yitzchak Avinu. Now what happens with Yitzchak Avinu? Vayihi rav ba'aretz, there was a famine in the days of Yitzchak Avinu, and he's living in Eretz Yisrael. So what does a good child do? He looks back in the history book to see, what did my father do when there was a famine in the land of Eretz Yisrael? And what in fact did his father do? He went down to Mitzrayim. So Yitzchak says, I'm going to follow the tradition, I'm going to follow the Mesorah, I will do the same thing. Now he was wrong, because the circumstances were different. Yitzchak happened to be an Ola Tamima, because he was brought up on the Mizbeach, he was potentially a Karban, and therefore he had no right to leave Eretz Yisrael. Those circumstances did not apply to his father. But in theory, he was doing the right thing. And Yitzchak starts traveling down out of Eretz Yisrael toward Mitzrayim, and God engages him in conversation, and he says, Al Teirid Mitzrayma, Shchon Ba'aretz, this is where you belong, don't go into Chutz La'aretz, you belong remaining in Eretz Yisrael for the entire duration of your life. Once again, the very first conversation that the Ribbono Shel Olam has with Avraham Avinu, with Yitzchak Avinu, are both about Eretz Yisrael. You go to the third of the Avos, Yaakov Avinu, and it should be no surprise, the first time that the Torah tells us about a conversation between Yaakov Avinu and the Ribbono Shel Olam was when he falls asleep, and he has this unbelievable dream, and he has a sulam mutzav arza verosha magia hashamayma, he has this ladder that is down beneath on the earth, that reaches all the way up to the heavens, and he has malachei elokim olim v'yordim bo, he has heavenly angels are going up and down this ladder, and finally the Ribbono Shel Olam appears to him. V'hinei Hashem nitzav alav v'yomar. And what is that message of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Ha'aretz asher ata shochev alea, lecha etanena ulezarecha. This land where you are now situated, lecha etanena ulezarecha, I will give it to your children. This is the beloved land of Eretz Yisrael. And he says, I know there's going to be a bitter exile, and you won't always be on this land, but I promise you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'hashivosicha el ha'adama hazos, I will bring your children back to this land. Ki lo ezavcha ad asher asisi es asher dibarti lach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Yaakov Avinu, that the story of the Jewish people will unfold in Eretz Yisrael. You turn to the story of Moshe Rabbeinu, and our initial conversation that we are introduced to between Moshe Rabbeinu and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is by the Sneh. And we have the burning bush, and Moshe Rabbeinu is taken aback by this unbelievable scene. And when that happens, the first message that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him is, Ra'o Ra'isi Es Ani Ami Yisrael Asher B'Mitzrayim. I've been paying attention. I am well aware that the Jewish people are suffering in Egypt. And don't you worry, Va'ered Dahatzilo Miyad Mitzrayim Ula Ha'alosom In Ha'aretz Ahi El Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash El Makom Hakna'ani. Don't worry, Moshe Rabbeinu. I will take the Jewish people to the land of Eretz Yisrael. That is where they belong. Once again, his initial entry into conversations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about Eretz Yisrael. And finally, if that wasn't enough, and if you think it's all coincidental, finally you have Yehoshua ben Nun. The very end of the Torah we read that Moshe Rabbeinu passes away. And I always get emotional when we get up to those parshios. It's like, is he really going to die again? He died a few thousand years ago. But whenever we read that parsha, it's like when we read the story of Yosef and his brothers. Are they really going to make the same mistake this year again? That's why going through the parsha is a good idea, being Maver Seder. He's supposed to go through it and relive what happens in the stories of Chumash because there's so much to learn from it. So we have the terrible tragedy of Moshe Rabbeinu's death, and all he wanted was to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And as we know in this week's parsha, Va'eschanan, he begs 515 tefillos, Va'eschanan el Hashem. He pleads with his life that all he wants is to go into Eretz Yisrael, and God obviously does not let him. Yehoshua ben Nun takes over the mantle of leadership, and the very first parak in Sefer Yehoshua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and he says, Yehoshua, Moshe Avdi Meis, you know that my servant Moshe Rabbeinu, my faithful and loyal servant Moshe, has died. Ve'ata, and now it's your job to lead the Jewish people. Kum avaras ha-yarden hazeh, your job as the leader is to bring them over the Yarden into Eretz Yisrael, and I want you to bring them there, and they should experience everything. This is the very first pasuk, the very first perek in Sefer Yehoshua. HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to him, and he has a conversation about what it means to be a part of the life of Eretz Yisrael. This cannot be coincidental. And what it means is that Eretz Yisrael is not just another one of the Taryag Mitzvahs. It means that Eretz Yisrael is a major theme and a central focus of all that Eretz Yisrael means to us as Jews. So I'm going straight from here to the airport, because we have members of our community and great Jews in North America who are making Aliyah today. There's a Nefesh B'Nefesh flight that is leaving at 1 o'clock today. And I can feel that there's no greater privilege. If I'm not going to be able to go myself, at least I should encourage those who are going. So I'm going to the ceremony they're having in the airport. You're all welcome to join us. It's open to everybody. And I think it's very moving. And it's a very powerful time to be there. And I said to someone this week that I feel so guilty when I hear an announcement that a member of our community is making Aliyah, and I, for some reason, am missing this flight. For some reason, I'm not on it. And this man came to me and he said he thinks that it's a mistake to say it that way. For some people, he said they should feel guilty because they're doing wrong. For many others, they have legitimate reasons why they stay behind. Children, grandchildren, businesses, whatever it might be. But he said you should have the perspective that you feel deprived. That's a very good way to say it. I feel very deprived. I feel deprived for myself, I feel deprived for my children, that for whatever reason, God doesn't want me to be in Eretz Yisrael right now. It's painful for me, it's hard for me, and it's not where I want to be. I don't want to be here. I want to be in Eretz Yisrael, and life circumstances have it that we are here. So at least, if you're not going to feel guilty, which some of us certainly should, at least we should feel deprived. And I mentioned this on Shabbos as well, when I heard the announcement that one of the members of our community is making Aliyah. So I said that I feel very guilty, and somebody came over to me after and he said, with all due respect, I think you made people very uncomfortable. You should not have said that. I said, that's the point. We should be uncomfortable. We should be uncomfortable. The story of the Jewish people is meant to be lived in Eretz Yisrael, and when the Ribono Shel Olam gives us a gift of being able to appreciate what it means to have Eretz Yisrael, we need to respond, and we need to understand that that's a major part of our lives, like HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to every single great Jewish leader. This is the way we need to think. Judaism is supposed to be experienced in Eretz Yisrael, not here in Chutz Lars. This is Galus. And this is what we need to think about, certainly in the days following Tisha B'Av, when we mourn the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, that we don't experience Eretz Yisrael. Well, now God says, I've given you the opportunity to experience it. At least take advantage if you're able to and make the most of it. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we know, was the Adon HaNaviim. He was the greatest of all the prophets that ever lived. And yet Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a fascinating story in the very end of Maseches Pesachim. The Gemara there says, I don't know exactly what it means, but in the end of days it says, all the righteous people will come in, gather together with the Ribono Shel Olam himself, and he will make a Su'uda LaTzadikim. I don't know exactly what this means. Is it going to be on this world? Is it going to be in the next world? I don't know. But I would imagine the kinds of people that would be sitting there. So just think about in our generation. So you're going to have Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Avadia Yosef. Sure, they'll all be there. Don't mean to leave anybody out, but it's just the first three names that come to my head. And then you go back one generation and you have Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who was one of the great Gedolim in Europe, and Rabbi Chaim Ozer. And then you go back a few more generations and you have the great Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Minchas Chinuch. And you go back a generation before that and you have Rabbi Yosef Karo and the Rama and the Shalah Kaddish and the Arizal. And all these great Jews are going to be together in one room celebrating with the Ribono Shel Olam, having a Suda. But it's not going to stop there. You have all the Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, and everybody else are all going to be together. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself and all the Nevi'im, Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yechezkel, all of them gathered together. Now they're going to have a problem. At the very end of the meal, the Gemara says they're going to have to bench. Now generally when you have a group of men together, they have to bench Mezumin. And when they all have to bench Mezumin together, they usually single one person out to be the one to lead. So everybody looks around the room and says, wow, this is a very difficult decision. We have so many great people in one room. Who's going to bench? I'm not making up the story. The Gemara says the story. So everybody looks around and they say, hey, obviously Moshe Rabbeinu's here. He's the greatest of all them. So obviously he's going to be the one. So all eyes on Moshe Rabbeinu. And they turn to him and they say, Moshe, perhaps you'll lead us in benching. Moshe Rabbeinu responds that he feels that he is inadequate. He feels that he is deficient. And the reason why he says that he feels he's deficient is with all of the great accomplishment, with all of his leadership, with his relationship that he developed throughout life with the Ribono Shel Olam himself, says Moshe Rabbeinu, and has, on his own admission, there is something lacking in my personality. There is something deficient in who I am. You know why? L'fi shelo zachisi likanes la'aretz l'b'chaye v'lo la'achar mosi. Because I was not able to enter into the land of Eretz Yisrael, not while I was alive, and God didn't even allow me to go in after death either. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I could accomplish many great things, but if you're missing that element, that aspect of your life, there is something very deficient about the life that you live. And we are so blessed to have the gift that Moshe Rabbeinu was never given. And we need to appreciate what that means, how lucky we are, and how blessed a generation we're living in. This all dates back to the story in Parsha Shlach by the Meraglim. When they were sent, Lasur Es Ha'aretz, they were sent to go back and get a report about what was happening in Eretz Yisrael. And they come back, Vayim Asu Be'eretz Chemda. They're turned off. They have no interest in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Not only that, Vayotziu Dibas Ha'aretz, Asher Toru Osel B'nei Yisrael Eimar. They come back and they report to the Jewish people that there are horrible things going on in the land. It's an Eretz Ocheles Yoshveha. There's no way we'll ever be prosperous. We will never be successful. Why would we invest of ourselves in the land of Eretz Yisrael if nothing will ever come of our living there? And the Ramban points out so beautifully. Generally, when we talk about Lashon Hara, when we talk about Motzi Shemra, which we should be careful about, generally the Ramban says you're talking about two human beings. You're talking about people who have feelings, people who have emotions. I will be hurt if you say something about me. You will be hurt if I do something against you. But here, writes the Ramban, we have an amazing phenomenon that we're talking about stones, we're talking about a land, we're not talking about a people, we're talking about a community. We're talking about the framework, and yet they did something wrong by speaking negatively about Eretz Yisrael, and that, says the Ramban, is a very unusual chiddush. Imagine one morning you wake up and you see all the grass on your front lawn is dead, and you see all the weeds are growing, and your lawn looks terrible, and your backyard does not look the way you want it to, and you start saying, you know, I just hate this piece of property, nothing ever grows nicely. Have you violated an Avera by talking negatively about your front lawn, your back lawn? Either you can do something about it, and if not, move somewhere else. You have not violated an Avera, says the Ramban, if you talk negatively about the land of Eretz Yisrael, you have. because there's this connection between the Jewish people and Eretz Yisrael. It is a part of our lives. It's not just my front lawn, my back lawn. It's not just another part of my life. It is my life. This is what Eretz Yisrael needs to mean to all of us. And to that end, the Gemara says in Maseches Ksubas Kuf Yud Beis, the very end of the Masechta, about the great Gedolei HaAmoraim, the Gemara says the greatest of the generation in the times of the Gemara used to go out of their way to do certain activities to make sure that nobody thought negatively about the land of Eretz Yisrael. So we're told a story about the great Rab Chanina, a very famous Amora, who on not too rarely, when he was walking through the streets of Yerushalayim, through the streets of Eretz Yisrael, and he would notice there was a pothole or there was a ditch, he would go out of his way to fill it. And they asked him, "Why are you bending down on the ground, getting yourself dirty? You're an old man." And he said, "I don't want somebody to fall in and then they're going to talk negatively about Eretz Yisrael. It's my job. I take responsibility." The Gemara then says, Rab Ami and Rab Asi used to have Talmidim who came to learn in their classes. And every day they would change. They would learn in this place, under the shade of this building, then they would switch to another building. And the Gemara says the reason why is because if somebody's going to be hot in the middle of our shir, they're going to say, you know, the land of Israel is too hot. And they're going to think negatively about what the experience of Eretz Yisrael means to them. And the Gemara writes there so many different examples of how careful they were to really show how much they appreciated, how much they loved the land, and not only that, to make sure that nobody else would think negatively about the land. I always think, when Americans visit Eretz Yisrael, you know, we're very pampered here in America, and we have a lot of great things that are at our disposal. And sometimes in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have those opportunities. And sometimes people who live in Eretz Yisrael have a different attitude than those who live in America. And I always am bothered when people come back from a trip to Eretz Yisrael and you ask them how it was. Oh, it was amazing. But, and then the but, about the cab driver who ripped them off, about the guy who cut them off when they were driving, about somebody who wasn't nice to them online. And I say, really, is that what you're going to remember about your trip to Eretz Yisrael? Is that really what we're going to come back and report to the Jews here in Chutz La'aretz, that somebody cut you off, that somebody was a little nasty, that somebody ripped you off in a taxi? Okay, no, there are plenty of crazy people in America as well. It's not limited to one country. Happens to be Eretz Yisrael is a smaller country, but even so, it doesn't matter. Says the Ramban, this is our obligation, to make sure that we always have a positive attitude. Tova ha'aretz ma'od ma'od. We should always understand, not to be naive, but to always be understanding of the fact that there's so much to gain from being in Eretz Yisrael, and there's so much good. Let us just take advantage of what that means. So the sons of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach commented about their father. And you know how much I love to tell stories about Reb Shlomo Zalman. He was a gadol in every sense of the word, not just because of his Torah learning, but because of his wisdom, because of the way he went about life. And at his levaya, one of his children said that it was often that they heard their father saying Birchas HaMazon. And as he got to know Delecha, the second bracha, they heard him say the whole bracha, and then often he would repeat it a second time. And it's not because their father was nervous that maybe he missed a word. And it's not because he had OCD. And it's not because of any other consideration. They asked their father, why do you repeat the second bracha? And he said, because, do you understand? This is our opportunity to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Eretz Yisrael. Maybe I didn't thank him properly. Maybe I didn't say enough. Let me just say it again to make sure I got it right. It's a perspective. It's an amazing perspective. And the Rambam has a letter which is quoted by other Svarim as well. The Rambam writes that he instructs all future generations that are descendants from his family that they should observe a Yom Tov. They should observe a day of celebration on the day in which he successfully made it to Eretz Yisrael. Because the Rambam said, in my opinion, there's no greater simcha in my life than the day that I was finally able to come to Eretz Yisrael and appreciate what it means. And I think part of our issue is, and I've mentioned this in the past, part of the problem is, like the Gemara says in Maseches Nida, Ein Baal Hanes Makir Beniso. The Gemara says that somebody who is living through a miracle sometimes doesn't have the ability to fully appreciate what that miracle means. You talk to people who lived before 1948, or you read letters about the longing and the yearning of how much people would give to be in Eretz Yisrael. You read what Rabbi Yehuda Halevi writes about how much he wanted just to have the opportunity to be there. And legend has it that he finally made it, and then he was run over by a horse or a donkey, a camel, something, right as he was bending down to kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael. It happens to be, I missed that. It used to be when we landed in Eretz Yisrael, you all remember this. You used to be able to get out on the tarmac, and you saw people kissing the ground all the time, and it was something that was so meaningful, and it's something that I feel we're lacking today, that we don't see that. To kiss the ground of the airport is not the same as kissing the ground of Eretz Yisrael. But it's something that we miss. And I saw a fascinating insight of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Rabbi Yaakov Emden has a siddur that is called the Tfilas Beis Yaakov. His name was Yaakov, so he named his siddur the Beis Yaakov. And there in the introduction to his siddur, he has a penetrating comment. He writes, the Gemara has a concept of Onas Rachmana Patri, which means, if I'm supposed to be observing a mitzvah and for whatever reason I'm unable to do so, so God considers it as if I have done it as long as I'm sincere in my interest in doing the mitzvah. Machshava Kamaisa, God will consider my good thoughts, my good intentions, as if I have done it. So take for example, somebody's in the hospital and they have tubes going in and out of their mouth, they have so many IVs running, they're not able to daven. They would love to daven, but unfortunately they're unable to just because of the discomfort, because of the pain. Well, in such a case, God considers it as if, Onas Rachmana Patri, Machshava Kamaisa, it's as if you've done it, you had a good intention. And that goes for many other circumstances as well. But take for example, somebody decides, you know, I really should be davening every day. I should be waking up early in the morning, but I'm just so exhausted. I'm not in the mood. God, I love you, but just let me stay in bed today. So I decide to sleep straight until 12 o'clock in the afternoon. And I miss this Zman Kriya Shema, I miss this Zman Tefillah. I don't daven in shul that morning. I don't put on tefillin. But God, I love you. Does that work? Obviously not. That's a decision. That's a choice that I made. You cannot claim that you are an honest just because you decided to stay in bed, just because you weren't in the mood today. You can love God all you want, but if you don't get up and actually do what he expects you to do, it doesn't count. So says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that goes with all mitzvahs HaTorah. Let's say I love Shabbos, but it happens to be I have a very important business deal and I really don't want to miss out on it. So I say, God, I love you so much. I keep every other Shabbos in my life, but this week it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry. It's not because I don't respect you. It's just too much going on. Too much pressure. It's not going to happen. Well, obviously that has consequences and that doesn't count as something that God would consider to be as if you have fulfilled a mitzvah. Well, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden the following. We have a medrash where we're told, Kol ha-mispalel b'Yerushalayim. Anyone who davens in Yerushalayim, ki'ilu mispalel lifnei kisei ha-kavod. It's a wonder to me how these words became the words of a song that do not fit at all the tune to the words. But it says, anyone who davens in Yerushalayim, ki'ilu mispalel lifnei kisei ha-kavod. It's as if you're davening in front of the kisei ha-kavod. Well, what about those of us who live in Golus and who don't have the opportunity to daven in Yerushalayim? On occasion we do. But what about every single day? We don't have the opportunity to daven in Yerushalayim. So what is our choice? What should we do? That's a very good question. So if you ask somebody who's very excited about Eretz Yisrael, they'll say, so move. But for those of us who it's not practical right now, for whatever reason, what do we do? Well, says the Gemara, and there's an answer to that. And that is, Haya Omed b'chutz la'aretz, let's say you're living in chutz la'aretz, for whatever reason, you're still in Golus. Yechavenes libo keneged Eretz Yisrael, you should at least turn your body that all of our tefillos should go in the direction of Eretz Yisrael. I remember a number of summers ago, I was in Australia for the summer. We were a group of young men who were invited to teach there for 6 weeks. During our summer, it's their winter. So they had regular school and we were teaching there in Perth, Australia, the farthest place I can possibly be in the world. And I remember the first day we had to make a minyan for Mincha. Many of the kids there were not frum, they were not religious. And we had to make a minyan and I asked them so naively, I'm such an American, I asked them, which way is Mizrach? Not realizing that not the entire world faces Mizrach. The point is you need to face Eretz Yisrael. They were all laughing at me. What is Mizrach? So, depends where you are, but the Gemara says every community needs to face Eretz Yisrael, needs to face Yerushalayim. Well, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, what is the reason for that? And he explains the reason why is because we do it as a zecher, ledugma, v'simana ba'alma. We do it as a way to consider it as if we are davening in Yerushalayim. We don't have that opportunity. We don't have that privilege. And therefore, we do it in a way that reminds us or in a way that will be considered as if. But says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, Lo toril hakavana b'makom she'ein tainas onas gamur uveshas revach. Maybe that worked in a generation where you had a really good excuse not to be in Yerushalayim. So then God said, you should face Yerushalayim. It's considered as if. But what if you live, like he says, b'shas revach? You live at a time where a Jew is freely able to go to Yerushalayim. You live at a time where there are religious freedoms, where there is no persecution. And we do have the ability to pick ourselves up and move to Yerushalayim, and you choose not to? Says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, of what good is it to face Yerushalayim? That doesn't work. That's like the person who decides to sleep in one morning and decides not to daven shachris, not to say kriya shema, not to go to shul, just because you're not in the mood. Well, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden, just because you're not in the mood to move to Eretz Yisrael, You think the Ribono Shel Olam is going to consider it as if you're davening in Yerushalayim? It doesn't work that way. I thought it was a powerful insight, penetrating insight. So we have in Parshas B'chukosai, we have the harrowing details of the Tochacha. And there the Torah says, what will happen? Imlo sishmu, if you don't listen, you're going to have one curse after another. Rachmana litzlan, God forbid. We should never have to live through all of those. So many generations of Jews have had enough suffering. But the Torah in Parshas B'chukosai adds in a phrase there. Vishavarti es gaon uschem. Part of the curse, God says, is I will ravage, I will destroy, I will demolish. Gaon uschem, your pride and your glory. Now you ask 90 out of 100 Jews, what is the pride and glory of your life? I would think most Jews would probably answer a million different things. My house, my car, my business, right? We have many other things. My children. We have many things that are the pride and glory of our lives, and rightfully so. Rashi there explains to us, what does the Torah mean when it says, I will destroy my pride and glory, your pride and glory? Ga'on uschem, it means it should be your pride and glory, and that is Ze Beis HaMikdash. That's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash. And it gives us perspective. For how many Jews in the world today is our greatest pride and glory the Beis HaMikdash? So when the Torah describes the greatest tragedy, something is going to be destroyed, and it will be the pride and the glory of the Jewish people. Think about how far away we are from understanding what that means. Think about how distant that is from our reality. How many of us would have said, if God would come to you tomorrow and say, you know, Rachmana litzlan, God forbid, I'm going to destroy the greatest pride and glory of your life. How many of us would have said, oh, he must be talking about Yerushalayim. He must be referring to the Beis HaMikdash. At least I would not have said that. And I think Rashi here is giving us a great insight into the way Jews are supposed to think. That is the pride and glory of the Jewish people. So much so that the Gemara says in Maseches Shabbos, Daf Lamed Aleph, B'shah shemachnisim adam ledin. That conversation that none of us are looking forward to. There will come a day in the end of days when we will have a difficult conversation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you imagine to yourself, I have many things that I know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give me a hard time about. And it's scary. It's scary to think about it. It's easier just to ignore it. But the Gemara says, we are only mortals. At some point, we're going to have that difficult conversation. So writes the Gemara, what are the list of questions? And again, this is never the list I would have dreamt of coming up with. But the Gemara says, this is what we have a tradition, will be the list of questions that the Ribono Shel Olam will ask us. Number one, Nasata v'nasata be'emuna. Did you conduct your businesses? Did you manage your interactions with other people with integrity, with honesty, with virtue? First question. First question the Ribono Shel Olam will ask all of us. Question number two. Kavata itim la Torah. Did you make Torah a priority in your life? The question is not, did you learn Torah all day and night? The question is, did you make Torah a priority in your life that at some point every day you set aside time to learn Torah because it's important? There are so many things that are important to us. So some people set aside time every day to go to the gym or to go on the treadmill. Some people set aside time every day to brush their teeth and to take a shower. I hope all of us do. Some people set aside time to do all kinds of activities. How many of us set aside time every day for God? Kavata itim la Torah. Yes, this is a priority. It's more important to me than other things. This will take a priority over other things that I need to take care of in my day. Well, says the Ribono Shel Olam, that is question number two. Did you make 2 to 5 minutes every day that you're just going to say 5 prakim of Tehillim? Something. Show me that the Torah is central. Show me that the Torah is important to you. Show me that this is a priority. Question number two. Question number three, which is phrased very interestingly, Asakta b'piria v'rivya. The Gemara does not say that God will ask, did you have children? Unfortunately, that is beyond our ability. If the Ribono Shel Olam, if God decides to give us children, then we are lucky. But there are so many, unfortunately, who have tried. Look how many singles are in the world who would give everything to get married and to have children. Look how many married couples there are who would give everything they had to have a child, and they've tried so many different types of intervention, and for some reason, the Ribono Shel Olam has not given them that gift. So the question here is not, did you have children, but rather, asakta bepiriya verivya. Did you make an attempt to have children? Did you go on a date to try and bring yourself closer to having a child? Did you get married? Did you try? Question number three. And question number four, says the Gemara, is tzipisa li Yeshua. Did you look forward to the day of redemption? Did you really think about a ge'ulah? And I think that is an extremely difficult question to answer. Because the Rambam writes a startling comment in Hilchos Malachim. Why is this in Hilchos Malachim? The Rambam there talks about the laws of a Jewish monarch. What are the laws that govern a king? And the reason for that is because one of the first obligations that we have when we return to Eretz Yisrael is Lahamid Lahem Melech. We have to appoint a king who is going to be the leader of the Jewish people. Now says the Rambam there, when he describes not only the laws that govern a king, but there he talks about all of the different aspects of life that will come to fruition when we have a Beis HaMikdash, when we have a king, when we have sovereignty, when we have a ge'ula. So the Rambam there writes, Kol mi she'eino ma'amin bo, whoever does not believe in the coming of Mashiach. And you'll say, that's not us. We all say ani ma'amins. We believe, of course we believe. So the Rambam writes, number one, Kol mi she'eino ma'amin bo, but look who he throws into this equation. Either number one, mi she'eino ma'amin bo, someone who doesn't believe in Mashiach, or mi she'eino mechake lebiyaso, says the Rambam. Equally as wrong is the person who does not anticipate and wait with a longing for the coming of the Mashiach, writes the Rambam, lo b'shar ha-Nevi'im u'kofer. It's not that you have rejected and repudiated all of the Nevi'im, Yeshaya and Yirmiyah and Yecheskel, and every single one of the Nevi'im that told us this is what we should look forward to, but rather he says, Ela b'torah v'moshe Rabbeinu. Look how many psukim and chumash describe our love for Eretz Yisrael, and you just ignore it. And you have no anticipation, you have no interest, says the Rambam, not only somebody who doesn't believe, but mi she'eino mechake lebiyaso, somebody who doesn't understand that we need to sincerely anticipate the coming of Mashiach and our return to Eretz Yisrael as well. So there's a fascinating conversation in the Medrash. I'm not sure exactly why it's Yitzchak Avinu. I'm sure there's some mystical reason why. I just happen not to know it. So the Gemara says that Yitzchak Avinu, at the time of the Churban, when the Jews are being sent out of the land of Eretz Yisrael, Yitzchak Avinu goes pleading with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he says, Shema ein chazara lebanim, is this it? All that we spoke about, Eretz Yisrael, lecha etenenu ulezarecha, you told it to my father Avram Avinu. Is this all we were talking about? Now the Jews are gone forever, they're never going to come back, no right to return. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, Al tomar kach. Don't think that way, don't say that. If there will be a generation that will sincerely and enthusiastically look forward to my return to Eretz Yisrael, miyad heim nig'alim. Listen again. God Himself says, if there will be a generation that will sincerely anticipate my return to the land of Eretz Yisrael, miyad heim nig'alim. They will be brought back immediately. And how do we know this, says the Pasuk? Because the Torah says, the Nabi says, V'yesh tikva la'achariseich ne'um Hashem, if there will be hope in future generations, la'achariseich, then I will respond immediately, v'shavu banim ligvulam. Obviously it's a play on the words, but the Medrash writes, that was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response. If there will be a generation of Jews that will sincerely wish for this, I will bring them a ge'ula immediately. So there's a beautiful story told about the Brisker Rav. The Brisker Rav lived in the 1800s. He passed away in 1892. And until the year 1877, he was living a quiet life. And in 1877, he moved to the town of Brisk to become the Rav of the city. That's when he became known as the Brisker Rav. But his name was Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. He was the Beis Halevi, a great Talmud Chacham. And the Beis Halevi was approached by a delegation who came from Brisk to negotiate with him that he should come be the rabbi of the city. And they told him, our rabbi has passed away. He's unable to lead us any longer. And we were sent to search for a new rabbi. We'd like very much that you should come and be the rabbi of our community. And he said in his humility, it's not for me. I'm not charismatic. I don't speak well. I don't lead well. This is not what I ever dreamt of in my life. It's just not what I need. It's not what you need. I think you should look into other people. And they're trying everything under the sun. They're trying to negotiate with him. Nothing's working. He said, it's not about money. It's not about the package. I don't need any of this. I just don't think it's for me. I don't think you want me. I don't think I want to go there. It's just not a good idea. Finally, they turn to the Beis HaLevi and they tell him, do you know that we are here on behalf of 25,000 Jews in Brisk who have asked us to come and negotiate with you? We were sent by 25,000 Jews who sincerely want your leadership. And the Beis HaLevi said, if that's the case, how could a Jew ever say no to the sincere request of 25,000 people? It's not about me anymore. This is about the Jewish people. And if that's what you're telling me, I can't say no. So the Chafetz Chaim heard the story and he began to cry. And he told it over to his students and he said, the reason why I cry is because do you believe that God is any less sensitive and caring and thoughtful than the Chafetz Chaim was? I'm sorry, than the Beis HaLevi? If the Beis HaLevi said that 25,000 Jews who ask sincerely for something, he cannot turn them down, do you think if 25,000 Jews sincerely asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu that they want a Geula, do you think he would ever say no? How could he say no? If the Beis HaLevi couldn't say no, then God can't say no. That was what the Chafetz Chaim took out of this story. Such a beautiful perspective. And the Chafetz Chaim in general was known to be a person who lived his entire life anticipating a Geula. It's told about the Chafetz Chaim that he never had furniture in his home. Because why would we invest in furniture if we're leaving tonight to Eretz Yisrael? What a waste. It's also told about the Chafetz Chaim, and I mentioned this in a shiur last week, this story, and what happened afterwards amazed me. I mentioned in a shiur that the Chafetz Chaim, it is told that he had a suitcase always ready to go to Eretz Yisrael because he believed that there would be a Mashiach, and he wanted to be prepared. So I mentioned that story in a shiur, and somebody came over to me afterwards, somebody from this community, and he said, I want you to know, my father's a very simple person. He's not a great Talmud Chacham. He's not recognized. Nobody knows who he is, just a very regular person. But he said, my father, from the day I've been a child, has had a suitcase in our home, packed with everything he can possibly need to bring on a plane with him, should he need to run out because he hears about a geula. My father keeps his passport in there. He keeps everything he can ever need in that suitcase, and he brings it with him everywhere. And I was amazed. I was amazed that there's a Jew in our generation who lives like this. And you say your father's a simple Jew? That's no simple Jew. That's a Jew who really believes, who really understands that Geula is a real possibility. So I once read a letter of the Chafetz Chaim where he had two local merchants in Radin. That's where the Chafetz Chaim lived in Europe. And they were starting a new business venture together. So they decided they're going to dream up of every possible stipulation in order that there should be no ambiguity about the business, about the division of funds. And in those stipulations, they added in as well many, many different details. So they wrote, what happens if my wife dies and I'm unable to come to work because I have to take care of my children? What happens if your wife dies? What happens if your children get sick and you have to go traveling around the country to get them some kind of cure? What happens if there's some kind of flood and all the merchandise gets destroyed? What happens if there's a fire and the whole store burns down? And they came up with every possible thing they can ever dream of, and they added it into the contract. Then they went to the Chafetz Chaim and they said, can you review it to make sure that based on the laws of Choshen Mishpat, we've written everything properly. We've divvied up all of our businesses in the right way. And the Chafetz Chaim began to cry and he said, you've dreamt of every single possibility, but you left out one thing. What happens when the Geula comes and you're going to have to leave your business behind and move to Eretz Yisrael immediately? Is that less of a possibility in your mind than your wife dying or his wife dying or your child getting sick or his child getting sick or a fire ravaging all of the merchandise in your store? Is it less of a possibility in your mind that that's going to happen? Said the Chafetz Chaim, what a tragedy. What a tragedy that Jews don't understand that's a greater possibility than any of the above mentioned in this contract. So the Chafetz Chaim has an amazing letter where he writes, We're very careful, or at least we're supposed to be. Midvar sheker tirchak. We need to be honest with other people. We need to be people of integrity. And yet, says the Chafetz Chaim, once in a while somebody will fool another human being. Once in a while somebody will tell a half-truth. But obviously we know when we interact with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, with God himself, nobody would dare to be dishonest. After all, he says, you know that God sees straight through you. You know you can't fool him. So says the Chafetz Chaim, I've been wondering. In Cain, he writes, Yifla Eifo Miyod. I have something that really troubles me, says the Chafetz Chaim. How is it that every day, he writes, we say Aleinu L'Shabeach, and not just once a day, we say it after Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv. Three times every day, we say Aleinu L'Shabeach. What a beautiful tefillah. And there's so much power in the tefillah of Aleinu L'Shabeach. But we are told in the second paragraph, Al Kein Nekav L'cha Hashem Elokeinu, writes the Chafetz Chaim, we ask God that we anticipate all we want in life is, finish off the sentence, Liros Mehera B'Seferos Uzecha. All I look forward to in life is not winning the lottery. It is not paying off my mortgage. It is not all the other things, but rather, he says, what I want with all of my heart is every single day, Liros Mehera B'Seferos Uzecha. That's all I look forward to. That's what I really want in life. How many of us can say with a straight face that that's really what we anticipate? It's really what we want. Says the Chafetz Chaim, so many people every day say a half-truth to God. You can't fool him. We can fool our friends. We can say all kinds of things. But you can't fool the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's not going to fall for it. He sees right through it. So how do we say this? Al kein nekav l'cha Hashem Elokeinu. If I was able to anticipate or yearn for anything in the world, this is what it would be. Liros mehera b'seferos uzecha. It's an amazing life that the Chafetz Chaim lived, but it gives us a perspective of the way Jews are supposed to live. So the Piazetzner Rebbe, the Eish Kodesh, he was a tragic story. He was killed in 1943, but along the way in the ghettos in Warsaw, he was writing letters and he was giving advice and he was giving drushos and he was giving chizuk to so many of the Jews that were there. And he says, let me ask you, Navin na ha hameraglim dvarm shaltam v'seichel amru. The meraglim were sent on a job. The meraglim came back and they did their job. And they said very sensible, logical arguments. They said the cities are fortified. How are we ever going to fight? And they mentioned that people are dying all over the place. Why would we go there? Dvarm shaltam, they made a lot of sense. And therefore, he says, if that's the case, lama lo hisvakeach kalev imayim listar es sichlam v'divrei ta'amehem. Ask the Eish Kodesh, the Piazetzner Rebbe, and think, he's writing this in the Warsaw Ghetto. Why is it that Kalev did not argue back point for point? He should have said, no, those fortified cities, we can get around the problem because there was an opening here, there was an entrance there, we can make some kind of attack in which we will be successful. Why didn't he answer point for point for everything they said? And rather all he says is, Alo na'ale v'yarashnu osa ki achonu chalo. What are you talking about, Kalev? Alo na'ale v'yarashnu osa, we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael and we're going to be successful. We just explained why it will never work. Why are you fooling? Why are you convincing the Jewish people that this is a possibility for them? Writes the Piazetzner Rebbe. This is his lashon. Avokach tzricha lios emunas isha Yisraeli. The Jewish faith needs to be lo bilvad b'shashara mevo v'derech liyeshuaso. We need to believe in God not only when it's clear the path in which we need to go on. Not only when we understand exactly how it's going to unfold and when we watch in front of our eyes how the miracle is unfolding. That is not the only emunah that we need to have. Ella, he says, gam al pisichla v'derech hateva. Sometimes, yes, somebody gets sick and we know the course of action that we need to take. Part of our emunah needs to be that God is going to help the doctor. Part of it needs to be that God is going to guide us to the right facility, to the right medical care. But we do all of the natural steps that are necessary to get this patient healed. But he writes, we have an obligation as well. Gam b'sha she'ena roa chas b'shalom. Shum mevo'al pisechal v'derech ha'teva li'yishuaso. Even at a time when we say, this is impossible. When will the land of Eretz Yisrael ever straighten itself out? We have millions of Arabs who hate us more than they love their own children. We are surrounded by so many millions of people who want just to destroy us. and to knock us into the waters. And you come and you ask, how is it possible that we'll ever live in Eretz Yisrael, that we'll ever have a Geula? And that is exactly what the Meraglim said. It's exactly what people in every generation say. How can we raise our children in Eretz Yisrael? It's so dangerous. It's so scary. How can we do it? The educational system isn't working out. And all kinds of problems that we have, and nothing's ever going to straighten out. You really believe there will be a Geula? Says the Piazetzner Rebbe. If you're one of those people who has this problem, the answer is what Kalev responded to all the Jews of that generation. Alo na'alev yarashnu osa. Our job is to do what God wants us to do. And we know exactly what that is. And just because Al-Pi Derech HaTeva doesn't make sense to you, is anything about the land of Eretz Yisrael Al-Pi Derech HaTeva? Think about the last 70 years. Is there anything that anyone would have expected to be the outcome that we see today? This is an existence that is so beyond our understanding. Think about what happened before the Six-Day War, when there were 100,000 graves that were dug out throughout the country, because that was the understanding. Jews would be destroyed, decimated. A second Holocaust. That was what everyone anticipated. By all natural odds, that is what should have happened. And certainly, if we won the war, it was never expected that it would happen in the way in which it did. 6 days? It's unheard of anywhere in the world. There is nothing, it's just one example of millions. There is nothing about any of the life that goes on in Eretz Yisrael that is Al-Pi Derech HaTeva. You have a question, how will it ever straighten out? It's a very good question, but it's not your job. Says Kalev Ben Yefune in response to the Meraglim, Alo na'alev yarashnu osa. Our job is to appreciate the gift that God is giving us and to understand that it's His job to make sure that His miracle will continue. So the Navi Yeshaya tells us that in the end of days, a beautiful pasuk that we recite on Rosh Hashanah. V'haya b'yom ahu yitakav v'shofar gadol. In the end of days, there will be the blowing of the shofar. Uvo ha'ovdim be'eretz Ashur v'hanidachim be'eretz Mitzrayim. The Jews who have been cast aside and sent to Mitzrayim, the Jews who have been sent to Assyria, to Ashur, they will all come back and rejoin in Yerushalayim v'yishtachavu la'Hashem. Bahar HaKodesh B'Yerushalayim. Once again, they will have the opportunity to join with HaKodesh Baruch Hu and celebrate and serve in Yerushalayim the way Jews are supposed to. And the Baal Shem Tov points out, why is it that the Navi Yeshaya mentions Ashur and Mitzrayim? Are those the only two locations where Jews will be sent into exile? Don't we know that Jews now are found? Me'arba Kanfus Ha'aretz, we are all over the globe. So what does it mean? Uvoho avdim me'eretz Ashur v'hanidachim me'eretz Mitzrayim. Not only that, I don't even know if there are any Jewish communities in these places anymore. In Assyria and Egypt, maybe tiny little communities. But that's not where the vast majority of Jews are living today, in Chutz La'aretz. So what does the Navi mean? And the Baal Shem Tov suggests, perhaps this is just a reference to the two different forms of galus. And I think this is an extremely relevant point to us. He says the word Mitzrayim could be rearranged to be read as Meitzarim, which symbolizes difficulty, brutality, deep oppression, and injustice. And Ashur, he says, can be rearranged to be read as Osher, which means prosperity, plenty, happiness. Explains the Baal Shem Tov, there are two different forms of galus that we experience. We have the galus Mitzrayim, and so many generations have lived through that exile. It's the classic form of galus, which means hatred, bigotry, oppression, persecution, Jews being victimized, fighting for their survival. Says the Baal Shem Tov, sometimes it's easier to get out of that galus. Because at least we know we're being oppressed, at least we know we have no option. The only option for survival is to get out of where we are and get to where we are supposed to be. But he says there's a second form of galus, and that is the galus of Ashur, the galus of Osher. One where there is so much luxury, so much religious freedom, such an abundance, so much comfort, so much plenty. And we are blessed to be living in that kind of galus. We're not oppressed. We have religious freedoms. Jews are prosperous. They're involved in every aspect of financial life in America. We are given equal opportunity. And we don't have our enemies coming after us, for the most part, here in America. And that is the galus of Ashur. And sometimes it's hard to remember that we're in galus when those are the conditions. And sometimes it's hard to remind ourselves that, yes, this is not where we belong. Because life is so good, it's very hard for us to have an outsider perspective and realize this is not where the Jewish people belong. Yes, life is perfect, life is wonderful, life is great here in America and in so many communities in Chutz Laaretz, but this is really not where the destiny of the Jewish people is meant to be. And we need to remind ourselves, not only in the days of Galus Mitzrayim, but also in the days of Galus Ashur, that we are still in Galus. And when we talk this Shabbos about Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, the greatest Nachama could only be when we will have a return to Eretz Yisrael. Until then, we fall short. Until then, what kind of Nachama can we have? But the first step is to at least realize, at least to recognize, that we are living a life of Galus Ashur. That we are living a life where we are in exile. It's an exile of plenty. It's an exile where we have so much. It's an exile where we are so blessed. But we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we sincerely anticipate the coming of the Mashiach. We so much look forward to His bringing us back to that day. Uvo ha'avdim me'eretz Ashur, v'hanidachim me'eretz Mitzrayim. This is so much what we look forward to. It's so much what we daven for. It's what the Rambam says, Misha'ena mechake lebiyaso. How could we be people who don't sincerely anticipate the coming of the Mashiach and understand what that means for all of us? That's what we need to pray for. As we come off from the experience of Tisha B'Av and now sail into the Shabbos Nachamu and think about what that means for all of us, the consolation. The ultimate consolation will only be when the Ribono Shel Olam gives us the opportunity to come back to Eretz Yisrael, to be one, to be there serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to reunite with Him. And that is something that we all need to unite in prayer for, in anticipation for, and something that we all need to begin to long for, because it will be a reality of our lives. It's so much what the Jewish people have aspired toward for thousands of years, and it's a dream that seems to be coming true in our generation. We are a blessed generation to be living through it. But ein bal hanes makir beniso. Sometimes people who live through a miraculous dream aren't always able to fully appreciate what that means for them or the implications of that dream. And that's what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We should have the fortitude, we should have the wisdom to understand and to fully appreciate the gift that He's given us until now. Adheina azaruna rachamecha v'lo azavunu chasadecha v'altitsheinu Hashem Elokeinu lanetzach. He should continue to provide us and give us the ultimate opportunity to return once again to our land. Let me just remind everyone who may have come in late, this was the final in our series.